the Around the NFL podcast has never been invited to a Shady McCoy party.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Getting the band back together.
Long time, yeah.
I was a little nervous before the show. Mark started having some of your heat flashes, and we're going to lose Mark. I got the vapors!
Yeah, I mean, we're at this point, you know, over the weekend. I don't want to break news here, but we WrestleMania 2, officially WrestleMania 2, happened, and I would...
Oh, it happened.
I am still physically recovering from it. That's just the truth.
You are not alone on that, my friend. WrestleMania, we talked about it on Thursday's show, that it's a show that it's an event, any West party, but especially a WrestleMania, where you check your inhibitions at the door and you also all your responsibilities, and you just float into there, and people reacted that way. And it was a tough Sunday for me.
I would describe the last couple of parties before this one as like an anthropomorphized cartoon train chugging along, dancing in and off the tracks, but generally staying the course. This one...
Yeah, I was.
You guys showed up around 4 or 5 o'clock. By then, it was already off the tracks, careening out of control, and took out villages throughout the end of the night.
It's grown too big for your place. Next year, it's going to have to be downtown at the Forum or something.
Oh no. The invite list will be trimmed.
Woo!
Breaking news. By the way, when the cops come at 6 p.m. to a party, you know it's getting out of control.
Well, and the cops had no idea how to attack the party because it was happening in so many different spaces and clusters throughout the property that any cop would have been confused.
I spoke to the two officers, and they couldn't have been nicer, and also throwing shade at my neighbors.
For calling on you.
For calling and saying, if this party stays, like, just keep doing what you're doing all night, you'll be fine.
There you go.
And that's what we did.
Not all of it is, you know, we can't remember all parts of it. Wes didn't even know that the Irishman was there until like 30 seconds before the show started.
Wait, you really didn't know he was there?
There were a lot of people. I had a lot of
He was the host.
I was smoking ribs, cutting them up, doing some other
smoking
things.
Smoking ribs? Yeah. All right. But we're all here. We all made it back. Greg, I was actually curious. You mentioned the train, which... made me think. I was curious all week. I was wondering where you were. Did you go to Japan?
You would know. I did not go to Japan. You would know if I went to Japan.
Or did you go on one of your let's have some fun? Greg Rosenthal getting away from all responsibilities. I mean, you didn't bring your daughter to WrestleMania.
No, WrestleMania.
Thank God you didn't, by the way.
WrestleMania was really the time for the train to get riding. It was a pretty wholesome family vacation, staycation, really, in the Los Angeles area. A lot of time with my family. We did go up to Big Bear, which is where Mark generally picks up hitchhikers for a couple nights. We went for two nights, so that wasn't the whole week, but that was it.
You could see from being there yourself why you feel it would be safe to pick up a hitchhiker up there. Very serene locale.
No. I would never pick up someone on the side of the street. Like, if anything, there's some things going on, you know, up there. Woods people, mountain people.
All right. So, a lot to get to today. Big show. So, WrestleMania 2 is a hit. It might be in a different form come next year. That's the news coming out of that from the commissioner and founder of WrestleMania. So keep an eye on that down the line. But for now, we have a lot of football to get to with the group. Two shows this week. We're going to do two shows this week. And then next week, as training camp is just about to kick off, we'll do three shows. But today, there's a lot to get to. There was a news explosion last Friday. So we have a ton to get to, including paying our final respects to Deflategate. So we'll get to that. Also, and this has been rolling out the last couple of weeks now during our assorted vacations. We've all contributed to the 2016 Making the Leap series. So I know you guys talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago. Some players that are ready to make the leap. We're all going to contribute one each from the list. Talk about that as well today. And that's it. I mean, it's going to be a full show. There's a lot to get to, Greg.
It's a big show. It's good to be all back together, you know?
Yes.
This is basically it, right? We're back. Yep. Three shows, as you said, next week, and then every week moving forward. The season, basically. I mean, this week's it's a slow week, but this is we're getting going.
Pre-show grade. All four of us back together, which is great. Talking about a lot of real football news to get to. That's great. I love just doing the show. I love being with you guys. I love being in the studio. I love Irishman.
A lot of love in the air.
B minus.
B minus.
Well, you don't love something if you're giving that kind of a grade to it out of the gate.
Irishman behind the glass, how you doing?
I just want everyone to know that you guys are not overselling this party. You guys genuinely – I asked you a question right before the show. Do you remember what you said to me right before I left? And you could not even remember.
I don't know.
No, there was a lot of conversations that happened over a few hours, you know, over many
Irish – I wouldn't call Irish a teetotaler, but he does have – He's not a guy that, you know, will dig in. I think a lot of that goes back to as a long drive to get to the east side of Los Angeles from the west side. But you probably have the best perspective of the party of any of us.
And that's and I was giving a compliment to WrestleMania 2. It was fantastic.
let's do some news.
You know what? I'll keep my compliments to myself from now on.
Too late.
Did you or did you not have a good time at the party?
I had an awesome time.
Right there, that's a compliment. That's a compliment right there.
Not for me. That was from Will Ferrell.
Oh, okay. Let's start on the throne of sleaze. Uh-oh. Oh, no. This one.
We come in peace.
They seem friendly.
I say we trust them.
How great for our planet.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Should not have trusted those aliens.
Poor LaKeisha getting her involved in things like this.
Hacky pair. Deflategate is over, and Tom Brady will be serving his four-game suspension, barring the players' union deciding to take this to the Supreme Court, which isn't going to happen. Nobody really believes. Tom Brady announced on Friday on his Facebook page that he will not pursue any further legal action in regards to his four-game ban for his role in the deflation of footballs for the 2014 NFC Championship game, AFC Championship game. Gentlemen, ending an outrageous saga that lasted over 500 days, 18 months, two off seasons. Brady will not be playing at the beginning of the start of the season. And Greg, I'll ask you this as a Patriots fan. It seemed to be heading this way for a while now. Were you happy to hear that news, or were you, as a Patriots fan, bummed that the fight is now over?
No, I was happy it was over. I've been, you know, we've talked about this on the show. I am curious about how they can do with Jimmy Garoppolo, so I don't think it's devastating to lose your best player by far for four games. I think it's a great team that has a chance to win some games early, and it's better that it's just over. Now, I've talked to other Patriots fans who feel differently. They're not curious about Garoppolo at all. They just want Brady out there. They think they've been wronged. That, you know, we've had all those conversations. I think the NFL, it's funny that even though Brady's the one serving the suspension, I've seen some people say, you know, okay, Brady was fighting for his legacy and this is it's after all of this, I think the average NFL fan that it turned out worse for the NFL than it really turned out for anyone. Obviously, it's terrible for the Patriots too, but it was just a bad little period of NFL history.
I think the NFL is starting to have an issue with some of the most exciting players in the league being unavailable for very suspicious reasons. For reasons that maybe 5 years ago we thought were good reasons, but now, like, some of the most exciting players, I want to watch Tom Brady for four games.
Yeah.
And I'm not satisfied, and I don't think a lot of people are satisfied with the way it turned out.
Well, and Robert Kraft, who, you know, he's been vocal from the start, formerly at least one of Roger Goodell's best friends, absolutely obliterated the NFL in his statement on Friday. And one thing that he pointed to, which I think would have become more of an issue if they didn't settle this now, was that it is exhausting for Tom Brady. It's been exhausting for the team in general. And maybe it is better just to put a wrap on this and move forward.
Right. Well, it was at this point, they were just hoping for something very unlikely to happen. So to keep fighting after the most recent setback, which was last week, would have been insane. They had to drop it. But how would it not be exhausting? I don't think that necessarily affects his play on the field, good or bad. I never really bought into the whole, yeah, he's playing angry. That's why Tom Brady played great last season. No, he's playing great because he's one of the best players that's ever played. And he's just in that period of his career where he's kept it going.
Greg, give us a prediction. Week 5, Tom Brady rolls into play of all teams, you know, a wanting Browns club. Give me the score, final
score. Of course,
score.
It has to be the Browns.
Where is that game? Is it in Cleveland, I believe? I think it's in Cleveland. You know, it's also, you know, I think Bill Belichick loves going into Cleveland and getting a win if he can. They've had some trouble there. 31-10.
Well, that doesn't sound like trouble for them.
I think we're talking 4 touchdowns, 350 yards. I think he's going to look great. You could say, oh, maybe he'll have some rust on him. I don't know. And to your point, I think when this stuff all broke, there was a lot of talk about, oh, this really taints Brady. I think that's kind of now washed away.
I think it's
obviously a footnote to his career, and it will be something that's talked about at the end of his career in some capacity, but it's not going to be seen as, well, Tom Brady, who is one of the best quarterbacks ever and a cheater, I think that got washed away as this thing got more and more ridiculous.
No, I think that Spygate had a lasting impact on how people view the Patriots and some of the anger that people have towards the Patriots, and I just don't get the sense, even from people who hate the Patriots, that they take this that seriously.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Some breaking news here at the Around the NFL podcast, at least for us anyway. It happened while we were upstairs. Arian Foster is signing with, wait for it, the Miami Dolphins. Veteran running back who, became a star after being undrafted with the Houston Texans. Blew out his Achilles last season. He's 30 years old. The Dolphins need help in that backfield. And Foster perhaps can bring a spark, but you never know coming back at this age and coming back from that injury. I did predict this months ago. It is the most Dolphins possible signing to get this slightly on the overside of the hill veteran that they will probably ask too much of. But if they use him the right way, Wes, and he shows that he could still play a little bit, that's a nice signing, right?
2.6 yards per carry and a torn Achilles is slightly over the hill. I'd like to see what really over the hill is.
Oh.
I mean, I have no doubt that Arian Foster worked his butt off to get back and will continue to work hard. I don't think he's a guarantee to make the final roster by any shot.
I mean, he turns 30 in a matter of
was the slowest running back I saw on film last year.
Do you think that in 2014, though, there were periods of 2014 where he looked very good.
Looked outstanding
looked
in 2014.
Terrific.
That's a long time ago at this point, though.
Part of the reason he was slow last year was because he missed camp with a different injury, so I'm sure he was not in football shape when he came back.
They did talk about, listen, it's his brother who owns this gym in Houston, so what's he going to say? But that he had been working, he's been running for months and months and has been working very hard to get back. Still, it's a bit of a wild card.
Well, it's a team that there's opportunity. They have as thin a backfield as there is in the league. So if it's just a look-see, we haven't seen the contract terms, whether he has anything guaranteed and how much is going to be incentives. I would expect he's not getting a lot guaranteed, not a lot of base salary, a ton of incentives. Whereas Wes said, you could even cut him in training camp if you get a look at him and he's just not ready to come back. It's a team where you have a guy, Jay Ajayi, who I like a lot, but is very injury prone and does not have a history of carrying the load. And then your backup situation, you drafted Kenyon Drake in the third round. He hasn't really practiced all offseason. Maybe he's the backup. There's been talk about, Damian Williams is there as a backup. It's not a good looking backup group at all. So maybe he comes in and he helps and he shares the load. I think at best you're getting 150 carries out of him.
The technology for Achilles surgery has come a long way in the past decade. I can't recall a single running back who's returned successfully. I know Andre Brown came back, but didn't really have any staying power.
Good to get his Twitter account back in Dan's life, at least. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, no, it's a fun Twitter account. Moving on, two massive deals signed at the deadline for franchise-tagged players on Friday, and we'll start with Von Miller, who Rand Getlin of NFL Media first reported, agreed to a 6-year contract with the Broncos worth $114.5 million and including $70 million in guarantees by March of 2018. and that makes him the highest paid defensive player in the history of the NFL, as we all expected how this deal would end with him being the highest paid player. And I don't even know. I'm also reading at Rappaport. Ian Rappaport reports $42 million of the deal is fully guaranteed, $23 million. So I don't know any of that hokum. The only thing we do know is that they got the deal done. And, Mark, nobody could be surprised, right, that Broncos had to make this signing.
I mean, for weeks we talked about this. It was just a matter of, you know, probably coming right down to the end. And the one thing coming out of it is that people close to the Broncos were saying that they believed that Von Miller was very serious about sitting out the year. If it came down to that, that he would have done that. Still, I don't think there's any, there was no suspense. We had this post written, you know, ages before it happened.
Pull that carton back, Sizzler.
Well, we did the same with Arian Foster. We're a prepared, you know, a high octane news operation.
There was a all hands meeting today for the entire network. And we, you know, we like to catalog the buzz terms. Wes, what was the one that really stood out for you?
I think sticky, snackable, mobile first content. That was one phrase.
I like sticky, snackable.
The treetops were mentioned.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I actually got goosebumps when I heard treetops.
He said, "I want to take you all above the treetops."
When I think of sticky and snackable content, it's Chris Wessling that comes to mind. You know, we're gonna have more of these kind of, you know, brief, little quippy posts from Wes.
And that was not the only big sign. Anybody else have anything to say on?
No, I think the way that conversation went shows our exhaustion with the Von Miller situation.
Right.
We've talked about it all offseason. Good for him, and all of the stuff leading up to it gets tiresome because it happens each and every year. Stuff like this happens.
Not as tiresome as the fact that we cannot establish a definition for guarantee. I can't even read these articles anymore.
You're right.
We follow the sport, and we don't know what the difference is between guaranteed and fully guaranteed.
How can a
general reader who's just coming to the site make heads or tails out of it?
Fully guaranteed is self-explanatory. Everything that is in guarantees, to me, is, as you would say, hokum. It doesn't matter.
Fully guaranteed
is what matters. And if you want to get into that, guarantees is a way for agents to, you know, beat their chest and say, this is what I got for my player, and use it as advertisements to get other players down the line. But guarantees versus guaranteed means, let's say something happened to Von Miller where he did something terrible or he got a catastrophic injury. You don't have to get the guarantees.
Fully guaranteed is bad grammar. You don't need fully. It's extraneous.
Mm.
Maybe this is the subject matter for your next long form, breaking down how this all works.
Is this the fully guaranteed podcast?
It's just guaranteed. That's all you need.
All right.
It's like using three exclamation points or three bangers. Is that what you call it?
I love using slammers, bro.
Slammers.
Like,
spot.
Everyone's salary here would be in guarantees. Because, you know, if nothing terrible happens, you know, it's in guarantees. But they could always change your mind.
Well, something terrible is going to happen.
What is that?
I'm just saying.
Mark's back.
It's all going to come to an end at some point. We know that.
Can we move on?
Yes.
Surprising. All right, so we thought Von Miller would get his money. We didn't think that Muhammad Wilkerson would get paid by the Jets. That was looking as contentious as possible. But good news if you're a Jets fan, because Mo Wilkerson and the team announced Friday. This was about a half hour after the deadline, so that's a little fuzzy about that whole 4 p.m. deadline Eastern. But they signed a deal worth 5 years. $86 million in full, including $53.5 million in guarantees over the first 3 years. And then there's some fully guaranteed money in there. Who knows what any of it means? But also, Mo Wilkerson off the market. And this was a big surprise to everyone that follows the game. And I think it puts an end to a frustrating period, at least for Jets fans who were looking at Mo Wilkerson as their best young defensive player and was getting treated like he was expendable. And it also put to bed something that's gone on for 15-plus years with the Jets, where they don't seem to make a priority to pay their top homegrown talent, Keyshawn in 99, Revis before he went to the Bucks, and then you have this situation here. They got it done. I'm very happy Mo Wilkerson's under contract.
Great move by the Jets. I think it comes down to, for me, that maybe Sheldon Richardson is going to be tougher to re-sign someday, but wait till you get to that day. If you're going to pick one of those two players, you know what you have in Muhammad Wilkerson, pay him the money. He, of any Jet of the last 5 years, he has earned it. Once you get to that point with Richardson, let's see if he doesn't get suspended again. Let's see how Leonard Williams is coming along. Then you make those choices then. But to me, Wilkerson should have always been the priority. So as a Jets fan, Dan should be there.
I'm flying.
I think also the Jets have had, after what Mike Maccagnan at GM did last offseason, this was a very shaky offseason in terms of the perception around the team, and they still have some things to sew up with Ryan Fitzpatrick if they're ever going to get him back. But this was a face-saving move by Maccagnan, too. Had they not gotten this done and he doesn't come to training camp or he's out the door after next season, you know, this keeps their best position group largely in place.
Question for Dan. When I read this story, what I immediately think is, who's playing nose tackle for the Jets?
Yeah, I'm wondering how they'll play it. I think last year, Bowles really mixed things up, and they played a lot of 4-3 and 3-4. So I don't know. I mean, they brought in McClendon. Is that
yeah, from the Steelers.
I mean, downgrade.
To me, he is their starter, but he might play, you know, starter. He's going to play 25% right. of the snaps. I think you have Leonard Williams is ultimately playing inside, probably more snaps than he's playing outside. But you're right. When I went to watch, I don't know why I was watching the Jets defense recently. I can't remember. But
for you.
Leonard Williams is inside for most of the time. I mean, he's not a defensive end. He's ultimately a defensive tackle. And they had four people with their hand on the ground quite a bit.
I think that's one of the reasons people raise their eyebrows. As much as I love snacks, Damon Harrison is, especially in today's NFL, how much is he going to be on the field? You're paying him like a star player, but he's not as versatile. Mo Wilkerson, stud against the run and the pass. Leonard Williams can be that guy, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. Good news for the Jets. Now we get the Fitz deal done, and perhaps brighter days ahead for the football Jets. Franchise tag deals that did not get done, guys. Alshon Jeffrey in Chicago, Eric Berry in Kansas City, Kirk Cousins in Washington. Any surprises there?
I don't think there were any major surprises, but what came out with the Eric Berry situation where after all this season of celebrating him and the Chiefs, you know, they say they may still work something out down the road. They tried to include this insurance policy clause where he had to name the Chiefs as a benefactor if anything were to go wrong with his health, basically. And the PR side of it on Friday looked terrible, where the Chiefs had to come out and make a statement basically to say, no, 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 because they did pull it eventually. But it just goes to show that there probably wasn't a better story in the league last year than Eric Berry. And in the end, four or five months later, it doesn't matter. It comes down to cash.
Well, that's dirty pool. What that says is that's some anger between the two sides in the negotiation. That only comes out in public if you want the Chiefs to look bad. And, you know, I don't necessarily blame the two sides for going after each other, but it really sounded like they were very far apart in value. And I think that goes to speak to more than just his diagnosis. I think Eric Berry's play over the course of his career, there have been differing opinions about how high a level he has been at. I think he's coming off a great season, but I think that's part of it. They saw each other. They saw his value differently.
Hard position to get paid very well at, too.
By the way, if you're interested in a more in-depth look at all of the news that went down Friday, Mark Sessler wrote a banger. Winners and losers from frantic franchise tag Friday. Marron.
Well, you know, everyone's shift was over, and I was the only one sitting there, so
well, you
they
did
said
it.
You write it.
Everyone's proud of you, and you came through with flying colors. Moving on, let's talk about some suspensions. We all love suspensions. Carlos Williams, who of course, made news during spring workouts for not being in the proper physical conditioning, and he blamed that on his wife's pregnancy. Now he has some more time to get physically ready because the Bills running back was suspended for the first four games of the 2016 season for violating the NFL policy and program for substances of abuse. He's eligible to return October 2nd, week 5, against the Patriots. And the Bills, I'm sure, you put together these two things, that he came to camp or came to spring workouts out of shape, then gets popped on PEDs. Those two things together cannot sit well with that team. And in other news, San Francisco 49ers linebacker Aaron Lynch suspended four games, violating the policy of substances of abuse. He is also out until week 5, a game against the Dallas Cowboys. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Do the 49ers have any defensive players left?
I don't think the defense is that bad. I don't think the defense is necessarily their problem. I mean, you got Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Ian Williams is all right. You got Navarro Bowman.
Where's the pass rushing coming from?
Where's the beef is what Chris is asking.
Yeah.
You lose Alden Smith, Justin Smith, Patrick Wills, Chris Borland.
Ahmad Brooks, Lynch. They don't even really know what his situation is going to be for sure.
This was their best pass rusher. And Jim O'Neill, who just spent the last 2 years trying to save his reputation in Cleveland, now is dealing with a defense that's got way more issues than answers.
Plus, with the news with Carlos Williams, they more has come out about him being overweight, about how much he was overweight, which was 25-plus pounds was one estimate.
Whoa.
And that his conditioning drills off to the side of Bill's practice, it sounded like it was a little butt of some jokes for people watching it, that they were ugly, that he was really, really out of shape, and now he's away from the team for the first four games.
I think you've said 100 times, Wes, that running backs, they're a year-to-year proposition. You don't know necessarily
like
what you're going to get.
Major League Baseball pitchers. Who knows what you're
going to get. Bills might have had a beat on this going into the draft, and that's why they drafted
good call.
Jonathan Williams.
Well, that's Reggie Bush is on either. Their radar now. I mean, this guy had 7 touchdowns. Maybe LeSean McCoy might be the happiest person here because he gets his red zone carries back.
We should point out, Mark and I talked about it on Thursday's show, that Jonathan Williams was the only player we could get Spice Rack to tell us to keep an eye on in 2016.
Well, you don't want your name coming out of his mouth at this point if you're a college player entering the pro ranks.
Wow.
Bring back Spice Rack. We'll figure it out. We don't know yet. People want to know. People keep asking.
He's got some supporters out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a similar situation to where we're going to get together and we're going to close the door. Mm. Some bagels, some cream cheese, and some muffins.
Locks?
Some locks.
So you're saying
we just have to hope that's all Spice Rack is putting in his body after what we encountered last time.
What was that, Greg?
I can't top that.
And finally, David Amerson, the Raiders cornerback. He signed a 4-year extension, max value of $38 million, nearly $18 million in guarantees. Rap Sheet reported former waiver pickup cashes in. Give me some good info on him, Chris Wessling.
Probably the most improved defensive back in the NFL last season, to the point where the Redskins just flat out waived him in September, and he ends up being among the league leaders in passes defense and passer rating against when he goes to Oakland. He was compared to Aqib Talib a couple years back by the Redskins. Great size and speed, but Mayock said about him coming out that he had never remembered a prospect giving up so many deep touchdowns.
Hmm. Wow. And
football. It shows how easy it is to turn things around. Not easy it is, but how it's possible. Go ahead, sorry.
Football's
so easy. This game's too easy.
Football analytics site Pro Football Focus named Amerson the most improved player in 2015.
I mean, he was one of the worst cornerbacks in the league to a guy that just got this contract. Football, I know other sports you can do that, but I do think in football it's unique how being in the right system with the right coaching, and maybe it's also just attitude, reaching a point in your career where you're going to go after it more. I mean, Jerry Hughes, one of the best pass rushers in the league, was once traded straight up for Kelvin Shepard.
How about this? Raiders lose a first ballot Hall of Famer who ran their secondary last year and could have the most improved secondary in the NFL. With Sean Smith, they draft Carl Joseph, sign Reggie Nelson. They're going to be pretty good.
There you have it. That's what's happening in the news.
Is fantasy real? Is real fantasy? You be the judge. I am your judge.
I say the future is ours!
Yes, folks, the third annual Around the NFL podcast Fantasy Spectacular is coming next month.
Woo. That's a tease.
One more time, Irish.
Is fantasy real? Is real fantasy? You be the judge. I am your judge.
I say the future is ours.
That's Frags, by the way.
I was going to ask, is that Frags?
Yeah, that's Frags downstairs. And she, I asked her to come up and give me some vocal help. She helps us out. She did the La Ravio Magnifico drop for us. And she was flabbergasted by how odd this request was. She said in all her years, she had never gotten a stranger email than the email I sent her asking her what I had in mind for this Fantasy Spectacular.
What do you have in mind for Mark Sessler's role during the fantasy?
Well, I explained this on the show last week when you guys were on your vacations, that I just view it as a time period where I completely coast.
Right.
I mean, we don't like looking at it that way, but what?
That's how I'm looking at it.
So like the second half of the season usually is.
Sort of. There is some parallel there.
What Wes is alluding to.
That is absurd. That was a shot
by the former boss. Yeah. Speaking of former boss, we got to get to that too, but all right, one thing at a time. A
lot to unpack here.
One thing at a time. Wes is alluding to the fact that Greg Rosenthal and Chris Wessling built Roto World from the ground up.
No.
Both HTML and brick by brick. Check out that podcast that surfaced a few months back.
Fantasy Lab, right?
Sure. It's a fantasy lab.
It's from the guys at RotoViz.
Fantasy Land or Fantasy Lab? I don't know.
Fantasyland. Nice Fantasy podcast. Land.
You guys don't even know the name of
it's
the show.
It's at Fantasy Land Pod. Fantasy Land Pod. I got the name wrong.
Check it out for a nice oral history of Roto World. But anyway, so I really lean hard. I'm just a regular Joe. I'm leaning hard on my left and right, the two fantasy experts, and Mark's here too.
We'll see if I'm here. My body might be in the chair. That's as much as you're getting.
You really capitalized on your fantasy outsider role last year.
You did. You made the most of that.
I believe I was 100% accurate in what I predicted. I have to go back and check.
You have officially pulled out of our fantasy league, or you say that this year, completely.
100% out.
That, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a problem too, because you're so out of the loop fantasy-wise. How can we expect you to be doling out expert advice?
I am just so plugged into news and the goings-on of the league, the real news and the real goings-on.
Is fantasy real? Is real fantasy?
It's a good question.
That's what Frags asked us all. Anyway, so we'll have three shows next month where we'll have segments dedicated to fantasy talk. So make sure you stay tuned to that. For that, I bring that up because I'm getting a lot of tweets about that. Everybody wants to know about the third annual Fantasy Spectacular. And we should touch on the reorg, as they say internally. It was brought up a few times on the podcast on Thursday. Greg, this is tough to talk about. Greg, who will continue, I think, to call the boss, or maybe we won't, because Greg is no longer our boss. Greg, we'll throw it to you.
Oh, I didn't know we were doing this so officially.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I am no longer your boss. Hmm.
Any violins back there, Brandon?
I'll look for it. Are you guys actually unhappy about this? If you guys are, then I need it. But if you're not, do we?
I'm happy for Greg.
Yeah, I think we're happy for Greg.
Oh, see, no violin. We're good.
Okay. A weight has been lifted off Greg's shoulders, visibly.
Well, that is probably true. Lives change, career paths change. Everyone does different things, and now I'm no longer really involved in the management D side of things. I'm just another chucklehead writing and honking about football.
So the listeners shouldn't worry that. I mean, you're still going to be on this podcast and writing articles.
Yes. Nothing really from what we do on the website really is going to look that much different, I don't think, at all.
It's basically
I'm not going to meetings. I'm not doing planning. I'm not doing hiring. I'm not nearly as involved with the news desk, which I used to run here from the digital side.
Humble brag.
As I used to be. a lot less meetings. Sounds good.
That sounds very good. I found there was a rich irony to a couple hours ago. They had a food truck here at NFL Media because of this corpo meeting that went on today. So they give out free hamburgers to the plebeians. And right before the meeting ended, Greg came like hurriedly over to us and he's like, let's beat the crowd. Let's beat the crowd. We can do this. And we were like, okay, we'll just follow him. And then sure enough, instead of being 100 people back in this line to get hamburgers, we were the first 4 people online.
Claybon was with us.
Yeah, 5 people. The irony was rich because it was Greg's greatest act of leadership. And he's no longer our boss.
Well, it showed that we blindly, even though what he was suggesting was a little bit beyond
risque.
The pale in terms of ethics, but we just, without any question, followed him.
Well, yeah. you can still be a leader when you're not a boss. You know, Tom Brady's a leader. You know, he's not the boss of maybe this will allow my leadership to come out
did
even more.
Did you just
more.
Compare yourself to Tom Brady?
Yeah, I think you did. And then I am moving out of the news writing into what will be essentially its own kind of landing page end around, which I've done as a column. I'm now going to do more stuff like that.
How would you describe your new position?
Interesting. I don't really have a boss right now, so we'll figure out how that goes. I don't even know if I'm really a part of this company right now. I'm just floating.
You are part of the company.
Are you at like the nexus between football and pop culture? Something like
that's
that?
Where I'd like to be, but in a good way. So we'll see where that goes. And then the other big news is that for the remaining, standard news writing around the NFL guys, David Ealy, desk editor.
Who has been mentioned on this podcast.
Yeah, well,
we unpacked that last show, and he's done a great job.
Major role now.
Very smooth transition so far, I would say.
Is this a man that you believe can be respected in his position?
Yes, more and more so. I mean, for Wes and I, our roles essentially don't change at all, except that I switch my devotion entirely from – I still am devoted to Greg, but now I'm fully devoted to David Ealy.
Still kissing up to me after this. I thought you'd give up.
I think it will fade away.
It doesn't feel real yet.
I think it will eventually transfer fully over to Ealy, but right now you're still getting the final remnants of Mark's brown nosing, which was epic.
It's not. It is called respect, Dan.
That's what I like to hear.
I feel like the only difference for me is that Ealy is now on the receiving end of my rants about the whole goals process in the corporate world.
Oh, you're talking about our internal goal setting.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of this is really just internal corporate organizational structure and all that stuff, which on some level none of it makes any sense for a media company. You know,
I mean, slow down here, Greg.
Well, this is
Greg, totally unhinged. Just
I'm not breaking. I'm not.
Hey, maybe close up that
kimono.
Don't
open the kimono.
I'm not breaking.
Close it up.
I'm not breaking news here.
All right, so that's what's going on with Greg, who is not technically our boss anymore. But until we think of a better nickname, perhaps, maybe that will be a competition. Pick Greg's new nickname. Maybe it won't be. I don't know.
The football blogger formerly known as the boss.
One thing I won't call you is Rosie. I know a lot of people do that. We've never really gotten into the Rosie game.
It's not respectful.
Well, it's not disrespectful.
Well, I'd like it to be more respectful than it is.
In college, that's all people called me.
I have a long-term ex-girlfriend named Rosie. I never felt comfortable calling you that.
Interesting. Pick Greg's nickname. That could be something. That could have legs.
I mean, the boss at the end of the show, at least when you're saying, just sort of, I like that. It's not like you ever called me the boss elsewhere.
No, but it just, don't fear change. That's all. Maybe we won't change it. But it's a time to discuss it.
We're trying to embrace change. We're trying to heed the call. That's what we're trying to do here with Chris Wessling. What is behind all this move? Life is too short.
Always heed the call.
Life is too short. If you're in too many meetings and things aren't going the way that you want them to go, try to make a change.
You only get one life, as far as I know.
We might be dead by the time you listen to this podcast. It's at least possible. So try to enjoy what you got.
There you go. Put that on a poster.
That got grim.
Yeah. All right. Our final segment today. Yes, Making the Leap. One of our, I don't know, most popular series? Does it do well?
It's certainly one of, if not our longest running series.
All right, good. Longest running, good enough.
One of our most persistent.
One of our most persistent series, Making the Leap.
Signature series.
Unkillable.
How many are there? About 20?
We've done it every year since 2012, so what is that? This is the fourth year we're doing it. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and how many new names do we have this year?
This year we have 14 names.
14
or 15.
And today we're going to talk about four of those names. And to get us going, we're going to go over to the Sizzler, Quiet Storm. No change in his nicknames. And he's going to tell us about a young running back out of the city of Believeland named Duke Johnson. Why is he making the leap, buddy?
I want to say one thing. I really enjoyed making the leap this year. I know I've been a critique, but we picked fewer players, and we picked players that we liked and believed in. And
you're saying it was a little forced in past years.
I just think that there was more of a bulk of a workload to deal with. This time was like, pick guys you're interested
been
in.
Out of the boss chair like 2 weeks, and he's already taking shots.
That's not a shot. I am actually.
Fade off.
I'm saying that this experiment worked this time. I did Clive Walford of the Raiders, liked him, but Duke Johnson for me. You know, I think being on a part of a terrible team does not help with your Q rating. Most people knew about Duke Johnson coming out of college. But his season last year, and just a really up-and-down offense, 61 catches out of the backfield. I think he's a special receiver. They can move him all over the field. And he caught, that is only the eighth running back as a rookie in league history to have 60-plus catches. And if you go and watch his film, a lot of that came with a bunch of crappy, disorganized play from Johnny Manziel and a little bit from Josh McCown, but it didn't matter who was in there, and it didn't matter what kind of defense they were facing. He was a very interesting player in space, and I thought for me, I'm picking him as a making the leap candidate, not just because of the actual physical talent that I saw, but I think he's in a good situation, better than he would have been had they kept the former coaching staff and all that business. Hugh Jackson is excited about him, and he proved that he is because, you know, they have Isaiah Crowell, who I think has some issues. He's got to be more consistent as a player in general. But with Duke Johnson, he gets comparisons to Gio Bernard. He got comparisons coming out of the league. Also from Bucky Brooks to LeSean McCoy. And he's really a good, you know, Hugh Jackson, they didn't draft anyone else. They could have gone and drafted three other running backs and signed a bunch of people.
Had enough picks.
They seem very content with making Duke Johnson a big part of this offense. And, you know, my proof from him is that he did it with a bad quarterback play last year. They're probably going to have bad quarterback play again. I don't think it will completely diminish his workload. I think he's a target to have more than 61 catches, maybe 80.
The name of this exercise is making the leap. If he does have continued terrible quarterback play with him, wouldn't that really hold him back from actually going to that next level?
Ultimately, sure. That would be true of a lot of any skill player, I guess, to some degree. But he just proved last year that it wasn't, no matter the situation around him, he's got a much better, I think Hugh Jackson's going to know how to use him well. And so there's promise. I mean, we've swung and missed on a bunch of these guys, but I don't feel that way about him. I think that he's a very interesting player, and he's a weapon. I mean, they really talk about him, all the coaches. Someone called him an ultimate weapon for our
offense. Don't think he's a third down back. I think that's the reputation for Duke Johnson, is he's a small guy that you think of as the prototypical third down back. Yes, he's great on passing downs. That's going to be his number one skill, that you can line him up wherever. He can beat linebackers. But he's 210 pounds.
Same size as Frank Gore.
When he came into the league, he might be a little bigger now. And what really impressed me about Duke Johnson watching him wasn't all the catches, which I knew about and were special, but he had a lot of yards after contact. He broke a lot of tackles, and I think he's a lot stronger than people probably realize, a little bit like Gio Bernard. But even more so, I could see Duke Johnson being a guy that has a lot of touches and runs a lot between the tackles. He looked like a guy who could be an all three down back type of player if they give him the chance.
I don't know if that would happen this year for him, but you're absolutely right, because it wasn't all perimeter type stuff. It wasn't all on the flats. If you go watch the Seahawks game, where really it looks like the offense has just given up in some of these late season Browns games, he plowed through them for like 60 yards right up the middle.
He's bouncing off guys. Yeah. He's got strong legs.
Yep.
All right, Chris Wessling, who are we talking about for you?
I feel a little bad about this, that we're going with David Johnson right for Duke Johnson, the timing of it, because Duke Johnson pales in comparison. I'm sorry, I know he has a bright future, but David Johnson is on another level entirely. You're talking about a 6'1", 230 back with better receiving skills than Duke Johnson. David Johnson said after that Packers blowout in week 16, they tried covering me with a linebacker, switched to a safety. By the end of the game, they were double teaming me with a nickel corner. That's how good he is as a receiver. Before Chris Johnson got hurt, David Johnson is lining up outside in the slot. They're using him as a receiver, as a sidekick to Chris Johnson. That's what he can do as a receiver. As a runner, he's got everything. He can run inside. He can run between the tackles, grind out tough yardage, goal line back. He can also break away from defenders as well as any running back in the game. He's got game-breaking speed. And if you talk about comparisons, Marshall Faulk, Tyrann Mathieu compared him to Marshall Faulk, a bigger Marshall Faulk. Carson Palmer compared him to Todd Gurley. Bruce Arians compared him to Matt Forte, and their offensive consultant, Tom Moore, compared him to Hall of Famer Franco Harris. It doesn't get much better than that.
Do you feel like he made the leap last year? I mean, he did remarkable stuff as a rookie.
He led the NFL in yards from scrimmage from the time he took over as their starting running back till the end of the regular season, and I feel like that's what we're going to see this year, that he's going to be – he's a Le'Veon Bell type who can do anything, do everything, play three downs. You're talking about a guy, when we were at the Combine, we asked Bruce Arians, is he already one of the best running backs in the league? And he said, well, I can't say that yet, but he has a chance to be one of the all-time best. And if you watched All or Nothing, which Dan Hanses has done a great job of chronicling.
Thank you, buddy.
Stump Mitchell, in the final episode, their running backs coach. This is the sentence he leaves with David Johnson with. You were the back I wanted because I thought you were better than Gurley. The Hall of Fame, you should have a bust when your ass is done playing, and hopefully if you can stay healthy. I mean, I've coached some good backs. Ain't no question you're a Hall of Fame guy, none whatsoever.
Mm. Yeah, that was in a private one-on-one meeting after the season ended, which tells you a lot about how people feel about him. And, Mark, you were saying, did he already break out? We do have, like, here's a good example. Duke Johnson kind of established himself as a quality starter last year. We see him vaulting to, like, a standout type player.
Right.
Wes, you see David Johnson going from a standout player to being an outright superstar this year. There's the distinction.
The distinction is between their ceilings. David Johnson has as high of a ceiling as any running back in football.
Right. I think if you're doing the draft again, David Johnson's a top 10 pick.
Yes.
I think if you're doing the draft again, Duke Johnson, who I think was the 7th, 8th, 9th player taken in a very good and deep running back draft, I would only put two guys definitely ahead of him from that group. I would say Matt Jones is maybe still ahead of him, and then he would be an early second-round pick, whereas he was taken much later. But it doesn't – I think they both fit on making the leap.
Well, I think what the distinction is that making the leap certainly has different types of players.
Right.
We're not calling every player on the making leap list a future Hall of Famer. David Johnson has to be at the one end of the spectrum of that.
And this is also going back to All or Nothing again, because All or Nothing did a really nice job, you know, spotlighting David Johnson as he went from, you know, third round pick to star in that team. But it goes to show you how much luck can play into an organization, even if it's really run well, because they wanted Ameer Abdullah. They were, we talked about this on the podcast a couple weeks ago, slapping each other on the back in the war room, all excited that they were getting Ameer Abdullah. The Lions take him right from out under them, and then they have to scramble a little bit and then settle on David Johnson. So it just shows you how luck plays a big role in teams coming together and becoming great teams. But it all worked out for the Cardinals.
No doubt. And I still like Ameer Abdullah better than Duke Johnson. I still think Ameer Abdullah has a really bright future.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I liked in All or Nothing, too, that so early in the process, Arians was concrete in his plan for David Johnson that, oh, of course we're not going to give him carries early. Like, they brought in Chris Johnson just to prevent that from happening, that they had a plan, even though that they saw his ceiling as this high that we're talking about. They still had a plan, and they were not rushing to get him into the lineup. And that there are not a lot of teams with that, not only that they're going to be right about a player, but that are going to have the foresight and the discipline to pull that off.
He says memorably, David Johnson can be a bell cow by Thanksgiving. And
right.
That's exactly what happened.
While we're here, I know this is a little tease here for the
Fantasy Spectacular.
Spectacular.
Is fantasy real? Is real fantasy? You be the judge. I am your judge.
I say the future is ours.
Yes.
Looking at some average draft position data here, David Johnson going roughly about as the 7th pick in fantasy drafts.
There
you
go.
So that is a high ceiling. What would you take him before or after that, Chris Wesseling?
I would probably take him before that. I don't do redraft leagues anymore, but I'm out. But, yeah, if I was forced to, I would take
him. Is he the first running back off the board for you?
You got Bell as an option, Gurley, of course.
He might be. He's going to be more involved in the passing game than Gurley. Peterson's another year older, and Le'Veon Bell just seems to be a little injury prone.
I might go Gurley, and I think he'll be involved enough. He's good. He can be good.
You guys are not going to believe this. I'm going to talk about a New York Jet, and he plays on the defensive line. And, you know, for a guy, he went 6th overall, and immediately people spoke of him as a steal for the Jets. A lot of people thought this player was going to go potentially top 3, number 1 defensive player in the draft. And then what he had was kind of a bit of a quiet rookie season in some respects. You didn't hear his name pop up a lot, but he was plugging away, Greg Rosenthal, and he was quietly having an impact season. And I'm talking about, of course, Leonard Williams, the defensive lineman that we referenced earlier in the show. And, you know, he had 3 sacks last year. And you would think, oh, wait a second, this guy is supposed to be a do-it-all defensive lineman. But a closer look at his play tells you a different story. He got to the quarterback with regularity. In fact, he led the team in QB hits during the season. He was a run stuffer. He recorded 811 defensive snaps, which is 3rd among all defensive linemen. He did this all, guys.
Mm.
at 21 years old, which made him the youngest player on the Jets and one of the youngest starters in football. And just, again, to give you an idea of how, even if you didn't hear a lot about him, doesn't mean that he wasn't a big-time player for them. When he was off the field, this per ESPN Stats and Info, New York allowed 4.8 yards per play when he was on the field, excuse me, compared to 5.9 yards when he was not on the field. So he was a big-time difference maker. And I think the age is something that shouldn't be lost. If you're that young, you're just not physically ready to go against some of these hog mollies, some of these beasts at the line of scrimmage. I think another year of being a pro, of being in a full off-season program, which he has been, could make all the difference in the world. So Leonard Williams, I think, is a guy that I see making the leap from being a quality starter to a true standout with ceiling that's even higher than that if everything clicks. One name that was passed around a lot or bandied about, Greg, when he was drafted, is that he had Richard Seymour-type potential coming out of college. I don't think that's a crazy thought based on his play as a rookie. I think the arrow is pointing up for Leonard Williams.
They're not the same player, but it was a year ago that we had Khalil Mack as a making the leaper and talked about he had 4 sacks as a rookie and then exploded in year 2. I think the disruption is there for Leonard Williams. And coming out of college, his college tape was just insane.
Well, he's like Richard Seymour, and not totally dissimilar to Muhammad Wilkerson. He's just stronger than the guy opposite him a lot of the times. I think that's what stands out with Leonard Williams. He's more nimble, I guess maybe would be the word, than Wilkerson. But, he's strong enough to play that nose tackle position sometimes. They're not going to want him there all the time. He's certainly strong enough to play defensive tackle. And he just, in a field with all these guys who are the strongest people you ever want to meet, he just looks stronger than everyone else. So once you get the technique down, some more reps and practice, you would think he's going to only get better and better.
New York Post beat man Brian Costello wrote this in minicamp that he was, quote, dominant at times. He was living in the backfield, just making people look stupid. And Jets defensive line coach Pepper Johnson, who is one of those gruff old school type guys who's not going to be like Rex Ryan handing out hyperbole, told reporters that Williams had taken his game this spring to another level, and he said he's, quote, physically capable of being one of the better defensemen linemen in the league. So, put it all together. I'm excited.
It's a pretty great defensive line.
That's their best chance, by the way.
They could have an unbelievable defensive line.
They could, because they have a terrible schedule. We've talked about that. The quarterback play, even if Fitzpatrick's back, could see it take a step back, whether it's Geno Smith or Fitzpatrick being more Fitzy-like. But if this line can completely destroy game plans, they can steal games, and that's what you got to hope, that everything comes together on that line.
Final record.
There's such a
– I don't know. I got to see what's going on here.
They're such a peculiar defense, because when's the last time they had a great edge rusher?
I feel like it's been forever.
But they have three guys with three guys with all-pro talent at defensive end.
Calvin Pace isn't a great edge rusher, but he's been their best player at the position the last four years on average.
One of the least effective per-play edge rushers in the NFL, Calvin Pace, has been the Jets'
best. In terms of
best.
A pure pass rusher, yeah.
Maybe they should run like a 6-2. Just all defensive linemen just swallowing people up. No linebackers.
Greg, finally.
I went with Denzel Perryman, who is on a different spectrum of this list compared to a guy like David Johnson. Even in a best-case scenario, Denzel Perryman, who's an inside linebacker for the Chargers, probably not going to become a household name. But I think he showed enough down the stretch last year that you could know him as one of the best hitting inside linebackers in the league, the type of guys who make big hits in the opposing backfield. And just, there's not a lot of, he's kind of at a throwback position, but he's not bad on passing downs, but that's not necessarily where he's going to make his money. He's going to make it just by stuffing the run. And if you look at the Chargers defense last year, and it can't all be attributed to Perryman, but there is before Perryman was in the starting lineup, and there is after Perryman was in the starting lineup, and it was a huge difference. And the number one difference was they started stopping the run, and he was the best run stopper on that team. He is just a guy who has great strength.
Instincts.
And great instincts. So it's something that's a little hard to quantify, but he can look at the hole, he can pause for a half a second after the play stops, and you can really see this if you use Game Pass and the overhead view on all 22. Wait for half a second, read the play, and then just go after it and plant some people and make some hits that makes the crowd gasp. And that's tough to do in San Diego.
Isaiah Crowell has still not recovered from what happened in week 5.
Got whacked.
Right, that play I picked to start our highlight package because that was actually his, I think it was his second NFL tackle, or his first or second. He started out as a special teamer. He had injuries in the offseason. And so I think this guy, now that he's going to be healthy in the offseason and get a full year to start, is going to make a big-time impact.
We talked about this. The Chargers' defense in December was totally different than they were before that. And you're right. Denzel Perryman, he and Melvin Ingram averaging a sack a game was also the other big – those were the two big factors in their turnaround. I really like Denzel Perryman. I think he can be a Pro Bowler for sure.
Pro Football Focus has a stat called stop percentage, which is essentially you're stopping the opponent for either a negative play or a bad play, you know, near the line of scrimmage. Once he entered the lineup, there's only one player in the league that had a higher stop percentage than Denzel Perryman. That was Snacks, which doesn't surprise me. He has a high one because every play he is making is right by the line of scrimmage. And so that's the kind of player that Perryman is. He's more athletic than I expected, too, because when you hear these thumper inside guys, you don't think of them as fast, but he's plenty fast and plenty athletic.
I am watching this reel that you have included in, and you can read all these at NFL.com/makingtheleap. He is just destroyed. He just sent Ronnie Hillman back into the Stone Age with a hit in the backfield. Marron.
I like how you talked about him as someone that could have easily and looked completely at home on like the 1980s Bill Parcells Giants defenses or early Patriots, that he does have. I was not super familiar with this guy, not watched a ton of Chargers late last year, but like he looks like an old school badass linebacker that's going to take care of business.
He's a football player.
In the National Football League?
It's the highest compliment you can receive from Chris Wesley.
It cannot be any higher than that. All right, so yes, continue to track the Making the Leap series, which will continue to roll out for what, the next 2 weeks or so?
No, it wraps up this week because we've been going at it. We go the rest of the week, but that's it.
And I know everybody's ready for my Lamar Miller breakdown. Shocking. A lot of buzz in the air
about
Lamar.
You would do him
almost as much as they would have been when he was a Making the Leap player 2 years ago.
Well, he is making the leap. We'll see. Not from quality starter to standout. But from standout to superstar.
Okay.
Pay attention, everybody. You want to be on this train. That's the Lamar Miller train. Get on it. Get on it.
All right. By the way, you know what else is making the leap this year? The Chargers defense could. I like this Chargers defense. Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, Verrett, Corey Legit.
They're going to win the West.
A.C. Hayward. They could
win. That would not surprise me.
They could be good.
I think this could be the year they should have been team of ATL.
Wow. Well,
still time for that.
We got to figure that all out still. We'll be back on Thursday with our second show of the week, so make sure you check that out. Thank you for listening. Leave us comments if you could. What did we call it?
iTunes Challenge.
iTunes Challenge. Thank you very much, Irishman. Pick up the chisels. Leave comments because maybe in the next week or so we'll check in on the comments and reviews on the iTunes around the NFL page there and see what people really think of us, because there is no greater indicator of both public opinion and just basic human decency than a comment section. So that's it. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and the Irishman behind the glass. Till Thursday!